Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning into Chats That Matter, the only podcast exclusively for employees of Cincinnati Bell Inc. That's CBTS, Onyx Canada, Hawaiian Telcom, and Cincinnati Bell. Cincinnati Bell's operating footprint is among the most fiber-dense in the United States. While fiber-based internet has long been viewed as critical to economic development, the COVID-19 pandemic has further underscored the need for broadband access throughout the communities we serve. Cincinnati Bell's Unicity team is working with organizations across Greater Cincinnati to create more digital equity and increase access to education, healthcare, and employment opportunities. In this edition of Chats That Matter, we discuss Unicity's new partnership with the Dayton Housing Authority in Dayton, Kentucky, where Cincinnati Bell provides complimentary high-speed internet to more than 140 residents. Joining us today are Gordon Henry, Executive Director of the Dayton Housing Authority, and Katie Meyer, Unicity's Policy and Program Manager. So Gordon and Katie, thanks very much for being here today. We appreciate it. And to start with, wanted to have both of you talk a little bit about your organizations and your roles at those organizations. So, Gordon, if you could go first and tell us a little bit about DHA and what you do there.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Gordon Henry. I am the executive director here at the Dayton Housing Authority. The Housing Authority is a public housing authority, obviously, that consists of 45 units here in the city of Dayton, Kentucky. It came online in 1985, and I, in my role, kind of handle day-to-day operations, budget, capital funds, so anything that the housing authority is, my hands are in it. Been here a little over 2 years now.
And Katie, can you tell us about the Unicity organization and your role there?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Josh. I am the Policy and Program Manager for Unicity, which is the Smart City Division of Cincinnati Bell. And as the policy and program manager, I spend a lot of time working with local governments, municipalities, housing authorities, whomever is interested in smart city solutions. And I really focus on, you know, the funding, implementation, strategy, data analysis, sort of the back end things that go into, you know, somebody who does pursue a smart city program. So I've been with Cincinnati Bell for about 3 years, and we've been, you know, very grateful to work with the Dayton Housing Authority.
And Gordon, can you go a little bit deeper in terms of Dayton Housing Authority? Who are the individuals and families that you support? You know, how do they get in front of you? And just talk a little bit about your organization, maybe at a deeper level.
Yeah, of course. So we are a, let's see, low income, affordable housing is kind of our niche. Our households consist mostly of single parent households, single mothers, and we are income based. So people kind of tend to hear from us either from residents word of mouth or when they go to community action agencies for resources. And our office is located right in the center of our facilities and our property, so residents or people who are interested can stop in our office at any time that we're here. So pretty accessible, try to make it as easy as possible. And our residents tend to stick with us because of that affordable housing component, but also to the vicinity right next to the schools in the city, River City's transportation. So a lot of great amenities nearby is a winning combination for us.
Gordon, I think one of the things that the pandemic really illustrated was the importance of connectivity in terms of work from home, you know, certainly education from home. When did that really hit your radar as the leader of DHA? And, you know, when did you realize that this was really an important service that you needed to provide for your customers?
I think even before COVID, it was always on my radar, right? Because I deal with it a lot. I think a lot of folks deal with connectivity and technology, and that's the way the world is going. It just amplified it with COVID. And I think as well, a lot of my families, when talking to them or even friends who are teachers, stated, you know, when you have 2-3 kids in a household and you're working from home, your internet is throttled. So even if you want to be successful or productive or do the work, if you don't have that connectivity piece, then nothing else matters, right? So I think it's a little bit two piece there, but also when COVID happened and people were trying to sign up for vaccines, everything was online. There, you couldn't call, you couldn't schedule. So even if you wanted to be ahead of it or take this very seriously, if you can't get a hold of folks because you don't have that internet or capability, then it was a challenge for my residents. So I think it was there. I think it's also to that supplemental piece, right? Any way that you can save money, especially as a person without the means or in affordable housing, goes a long way. It definitely is a game changer, one, but I think we learned a lot of practices coming out of COVID that is going to be the way of the world going forward, such as Zoom meetings and being able to have the ability to work from home is going to definitely be par for the course. And how do we get ahead of that and make sure my residents have that if they have that option? So I think for me, it was, this is something that makes a lot of sense, but something we do take for granted and don't realize how often we do use social media and technology when it comes to our normal everyday lives, not just healthcare or work and schooling. So that's kind of what it was for me, and giving my residents more amenities just in a place to live is also very important to me. And this is one of the first big steps on making that a reality.
Katie, you know, Gordon talked about a couple of things we talk a lot about internally now is, you know, access to education and healthcare, employment opportunities. I'm imagining that in your role, that's a story you hear a lot about. You have probably have a lot of, that's not a new story for you, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, I think Gordon's absolutely right. You know, these were issues facing low-income communities pre-COVID, and that was certainly amplified. And we do spend a lot of time, I mean, initially, a lot of focus was on education, remote learning, as well as work from home. A lot of us, myself included, experienced that transition. And then, of course, telehealth. During COVID, there was a lot of deregulation around the ability to conduct your meetings with doctors via telehealth that I think was just generally really good for the community. But I think Gordon's also right. It's more than that. It's social interaction. It's workforce readiness. If you haven't been exposed to this technology, it creates a disadvantage when you're working on entering the workforce. Even things like online shopping and comparison can be important for, you know, low-income communities, because every dollar matters, and having the ability to make sure that you get the best deal possible is a value proposition or an added value for the community. So, yeah, I mean, the impact crosses many different sectors and, you know, individual experiences, and I think it can be quite an amenity, as Gordon called it, for their residents.
And then, Katie, how does Unicity connect with customers? How are you getting in front of communities or organizations? And how did you connect with Gordon's team?
Yeah, I mean, we are trying to get the word out at all levels of local governments and affordable housing to let them know that we are here and ready to create these solutions. But, you know, Dayton, Kentucky in particular, it's a community that I love. It's a small river city community in northern Kentucky. And we started by talking to Mayor Ben Baker. And, you know, with him sort of laid out, okay, here are our opportunities. We can talk about your business district, public Wi-Fi, and sort of the opportunities related to business attraction and analytics. We can look at your parks and see if you want to create public Wi-Fi in the parks as a destination. And then we also looked at Jamestown Apartments and said, you know, here's an opportunity to impact your affordable housing community. And at that level, you know, Ben brought in Gordon, and the priority was let's make sure that these residents have access to the internet. So that's how we got there. Gordon did a lot of work on the back end to get, you know, navigate federal funds and everything and get it all approved. But that's kind of how it all happened.
Gordon, maybe tell us from your perspective, what those early conversations were like with your government leaders and then, Katie and the Unicity team, and what all you had to get done in order to make this partnership happen.
I think on mine, the first step was very ecstatic, right? Like, oh, this absolutely makes sense. Like, why are we not doing this yesterday? And then it became, well, let's go through our proper channels. I had to talk to my board. I had to get, their approval. This isn't something that I can just do. And then it's, what does that look like? Funding aspect, how much are we willing to spend? How much coverage? Then I think we talked to the school because they're right across from us about maybe utilizing their building for some of the access points, identifying our buildings. And then it was just kind of timing, right? So when we first started, it was having these conversations, it was kind of right before COVID. And then COVID happened and was wrapping up some other projects on my end, but also Unicity was wrapping up some on their end too. So we were looking at the very beginning of the year to launch the project. And then luckily, we received some money from the CARES Act that we were able to use for the project, that we were just going to use that from our capital funds. But the CARES Act allowed us to use those funds for Wi-Fi and connectivity for our residents. So that made the process and progress even easier. So I think the first initial thing was excitement, but also, hey, let's not get ahead of ourselves and make sure we do this correct, and make sure that this is something that once it happens, we have the ability to build upon it.
And so really kind of from the beginning of the conversations to implementation of the solution, how long did it take to put together?
I would say about a year or so. Is that correct, Katie?
Yeah, I'm thinking it was maybe a little bit over a year.
So the longest aspect was just the initial conversations and laying the groundwork. But once we started with the install process, that was about 3 months. It didn't take too long after that. So it was more so building the network and making sure all the ducks were in a row and everyone was on the same page of what we were looking for.
And then this can be either for Gordon or Katie, whoever's maybe best equipped to answer, but with the service now installed, what is the service? How do residents access it? What kind of speeds do they get? Things like that.
I can jump in on this. I mean, Dayton, Kentucky is one of several communities who have taken this approach to providing Wi-Fi to, multi-dwelling units, essentially. And instead of wiring each home with an individual internet connection, we create a public network that is designed to, provide coverage in all public spaces, but also to penetrate each unit. And then it has a shared SSID, or essentially a Wi-Fi name, that each of the residents, know that they can log into. And there's not going to be a password or any cost associated with it. And that login methodology also gives Gordon the opportunity to share information. So whether it's a redirect on a landing page or an email communication, there's a lot that goes into our public Wi-Fi networks or intelligent Wi-Fi networks that creates communication channels. And Gordon, I know you've talked in the past sometimes, we're not talking about laptops or anything like that. We're just talking about cell phones. Even, running out of minutes might be an issue for residents. And so we see in our digital equity projects a lot of data that shows, a lot of people are using laptops to connect, but even more people sometimes are using their cell phones to connect, because then that becomes an advantage for them to save money on, like minutes for their phone. So
no, you're absolutely correct, because a lot of times with the minute aspect of it is low income folks need their minutes to make doctor's appointments or call their call doctor or the school or call work. Well, if you run out of minutes, those avenues don't allow texting capabilities, then you're essentially up the river without a paddle. So that's a huge aspect in that sense. But we also looked at it too, like Katie said, where we could have gone the route of putting it in each unit, but we saw the potential of making a web essentially for the whole community to use, especially with us being right near the community park and right across from the high school that anyone can sign into this. And then lastly, we want to connect our partner with the city of Dayton on the landing page aspect. So when they sign in, the landing page will go to the city of Dayton info so that people can see what's going on in the city, our council meetings, or anything else that affects them, because we know it's not just our residents that is using this service. And we find that really awesome, but also too, the importance of it, that it's a win for our residents, but it's a win for the community around us as well. So
Gordon, what's the reaction been? How's the service been? What's the feedback that you're getting from your customers?
Yeah, so the feedback so far has been good. I think we're still trying to get that info out, whether it's to the school or posted in other places, and just reminding residents that, especially who live here, that this is supplemental Wi-Fi access, not to cancel their current service. So just kind of some growing pains there. But for the most part, residents are loving it, especially that they can go outside and use internet and have that fresh air. Their kids can use it, take laptops out. So been a really good response so far, and hoping to build upon that when we start utilizing it more with info and all that good jazz when more folks are logging in. So
that's great. And I want to go back to something you said earlier and also get Katie to weigh in, but I'll start with you, Gordon. One of the things you mentioned was, you know, you need buy-in from the community, whether it's financial support, but also even, you know, infrastructure support. You talked about going to the schools and, you know, seeing if we could use their buildings for access points and things like that. During those conversations, what was the reception? Do you feel like the community members that you're talking to, you know, understand kind of the critical nature of this, and were people helpful, or did you have to do a lot of explanation? How did those conversations go?
I think for me, going from the very beginning, it's always getting that community feedback. Even if the community might be weary, a lot of times folks want to be heard. Right? They want to be heard. They want you to ask them, communicate with them, and then work with them for the best solution is the first aspect. And then it's all about transparency. As long as you go in and you're transparent and explain the importance of it, why it's important, what you're doing throughout each step, people can get behind that. So for us, it was very much just a, hey, we think this is a great idea. Now let's go to the community members who are around us, explain this, see their worries or concerns or what they would like to see. So when we talked to the schools, they were on board. How do we get this yesterday? Especially with it being COVID, you know, and they were having those issues going virtually. And their only big concern was, hey, we can't have any other technology on our building. So how can we get an access point as close as possible to the school so that folks can still utilize it? And then I think the other thing was residents just asking about, hey, does this mean I have the potential to switch over to Cincinnati Bell now from Spectrum? Can I cancel my own internet? So just explaining to them the process as well was very helpful. Really was no big pushback. I think even when we posted about it, that we did the ribbon cutting, someone was like, oh, our rates are going to increase for everybody else in the city. And even explaining that process, right? And being transparent there, like, hey, this isn't the city budget. This is a housing authority. It's a free service for my residents, but we did pay for the install. This wasn't gifted to us. So always explaining why you're doing something and being transparent was very important. And it's always a very important people can get behind that more. So community building is always going into a community and asking them, hearing their concerns, but also their pros. So,
Katie, I know you've had a lot of experience probably with those conversations, both in your current role and some of your previous roles before you joined the company. What are some of the best practices you can think of in terms of having those conversations with individuals and organizations who are going to need to be partners to make something like this work?
Yeah, you know, fundamentally, we start these conversations with communities, whether they're townships or villages or municipalities or housing authorities, with, you know, what is the problem that you're trying to solve? This is not, although a lot of similar technology may be deployed, how it's deployed really becomes customized to what the purpose of the initiative is. And so laying that out, sort of defining what's the problem and then defining why this is the best solution is a big part of it. So when we talk about digital equity specifically, we have that conversation. You have a universe of options. You can use, you know, MiFi cellular devices. You can use grant-funded direct connection programs. You can use intelligent Wi-Fi. There are a couple of different ways that you can go, but oftentimes we find that a public Wi-Fi network with the software creates more opportunities and costs less and is more fixed and a long-term solution than the other components I mentioned earlier. So as we go through that with a local government and say, you know, here's your options, here's what we're doing, it gives them the understanding and the transparency to say, this is the best option for me. And then, you know, to share that information, you know, among elected officials and community members so that everybody's on the same page about why the decision was made to go with our solution specifically.
Gordon, as you think ahead, both about your organization's experience, but then other organizations who do similar work, do you view, you know, providing a service like this as almost a must-have going forward? How do you think about that as you think about, you know, what all your organization and similar organizations need to offer, you know, their customers?
I see it as a must-have. And, you know, whether it's our housing, whether it's affordable housing or low income, or even market rate housing or apartments, right? People are more inclined to want to move to these places that have that connectivity piece and that amenity and that aspect, one. But also, two, I don't see how you can't have this going forward, whether it's our housing development or a city or anybody as we move into this brave new world of seamless technology, right? And that key component. So I think it's one of those things where if you're trying to appeal or get people to move to your area, it's a game changer, but also too just a necessary idol. I don't see how you can avoid it, and very important just for us to start becoming proactive and getting ahead of it while it's in place so we can build upon it.
And maybe to wrap up here, Katie is part of the Unicity team. What are the opportunities going forward? Is this a really important area of focus for your team to do, you know, similar type installations, you know, throughout the region?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as far as, you know, we can talk about the continuum of housing and neighborhoods, but we're just at the tip of the iceberg of, you know, people who could potentially benefit from this sort of solution. And I think on the broader perspective, beyond just access to the internet and access to high-speed internet, because I think it's an important clarification, because oftentimes in the lower-income neighborhoods, there's internet access, but it's not quite fast enough to host, you know, online learning, remote learning, or work from home. So we need to understand the difference between access to the internet and access to high-speed internet, but also the ability to create direct communication channels. My background is in local government, and we always wanted to make sure we were engaging the most disadvantaged people, the people who had the least access to government services to say, you know, what are your needs and how can we help? And to be able to use public Wi-Fi as an avenue to gain that community engagement and community input is going to make our government stronger overall. So we see this as having multiple benefits and, you know, plenty of spaces and places to go and continue to build and hopefully impact folks' lives and ability to be successful in their lives.
Well, this has been great. Gordon, Katie, thanks very much for your time and your perspective. And we look forward to hearing about more of these projects going forward. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.